Drink in the shoulder. All right, ladies. Up, 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 up.
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to the Faster Skier Podcast. We recently connected with longtime Canadian national ski team member Devin Kershaw. Despite his deep Canadian roots, Kershaw has settled in Norway with his wife, former Norwegian cross-country ski star Kristin Stormer Stiera. Originally from Sudbury, Ontario, Kershaw has been living the international ski racing life since the early 2000s. He's now 33 and says he's ski racing for at least two more years. Currently, Kershaw is many time zones ahead, training hard and practicing his Norwegian when the occasion arises. Norwegian or English in the Kershaw-Stiera household? Listen up to find out the answer. Where are you currently?
I am currently in Oslo, Norway.
Okay, so Oslo, Norway is now your kind of permanent home at this point?
For sure. At this point, most certainly. I mean, Kristin, my wife, she's Norwegian. So we got married last year, and with her moving on from skiing and taking a real big girl job with a cancer prevention outfit called Active Against Cancer, what's actually called Active Mot Kreft, but that's the translation, based here in Oslo. So I've kind of been based in Norway now. Not kind of. I am based in Norway now for sure, but we still own a house in Camor, and like I still have roots in Camor as well.
You know, one thing I am interested in, and I spoke to you, I want to say early last winter, I don't know if you recall this, but you said something like, oh, sometimes it can be a little bit lonely living in a city where I don't know a ton of folks. And it's been a while since that. So I'm kind of curious, you know, what is it like living in Oslo full time, and how have you adjusted in terms of social life and linguistically?
Of course, you know, like, how have I adjusted? Like, the funny thing is, with being based here in Oslo or being based in Norway now more, quote unquote, like full time as you can be being a Canadian cross-country skier, is that, you know, while I've been in and out of the city quite a bit in the last few years, it's not really till this spring when I packed up a lot of my stuff and flew over here, and it's like, okay, you land, and it's like, you're here now. Like, this is home for you now. So I really feel like when people are like, oh yeah, you've been living in Norway for a while, it's like, you know what? I really feel as though like I've been living in Norway since April. Like, I have not been living in Norway all that long. So like more quote unquote full time. So how does it feel? I mean, like, first of all, Oslo is a beautiful city. And while I'm not the biggest city person in the whole wide world, like if it was up to me, in a perfect world, I'd live in a small town in the mountains somewhere. Not so picky, but that'd be my dream. But if I had to live in a city, I really feel as though Oslo is right up there, probably one of the top three cities, livable cities, that I've ever visited in my entire life. So I am quite lucky, and we live quite close to downtown, so it's a very like urban environment, which I'm not used to, and that's really fun in a way when you're not used to living in a big city ever and you're like in the thick of it. That's really fun. But the really unique thing about Oslo, of course, is within 15 minutes of running on pavement, I'm on trails that stretch for hundreds and hundreds of kilometers, pretty much as you want. I mean, you can ski from Oslo to Lillehammer if you wanted to. That's a few hundred kilometers. So there's a lot of wilderness right at your fingertips, which is so unique for a city, a capital city anywhere in the world. And it's a really, really unique city. So I've really enjoyed that part of it. And no, for sure, like we talked about previously, of course, like from a social side of things, I mean, it's hard, you know, I'm not going to lie, like living in a foreign country and being a skier where you know, maybe you can't partake in like a lot of like the social type things, read like drinking beers and like going out partying and stuff like that. That's not really part of my whole deal. So, and also too, I'm in and out a lot. Like, it's rare that I'm in Oslo for 3-4 weeks at a time and not traveling somewhere for competitions or training camps or visiting family or some friends that we have here. And then from a linguistic side of things, I'm getting better and better in Norwegian for sure. But of course, I'm not fluent and my understanding is not 100%. I would say like reading a newspaper is quite good, and my vocabulary or words that I know and recognize is quite good, but the different dialects here in Norway can be like a real challenge for me. So depending on who I'm talking to, like some people I understand like quite well and we can converse pretty well. And then some people, like if you have a Norwegian that's from the West Coast, let's say like somewhere north of Bergen, but right on the Atlantic Ocean like that, like forget it. I mean, like I feel like I have 10% comprehension, if that. So that's a challenge.
So you can converse a bit in Norwegian, say if you're in Oslo?
Yeah, for sure. If I'm talking with somebody that's born and raised in Oslo and they're looking at me directly into the eyes and they slow it down a little bit, for sure. Like if they just start hammering away, it poses a problem, of course. And then the other thing too is if I'm having a conversation one-on-one, it is so much easier. And I get so much more than if, say, Kristen and I are out for dinner with friends and there's a few different topics jumping around all the time. Once I lose the context of what the conversation is, then it just becomes like these random words that I'm not fluent enough to be able to understand and participate in like three conversations at once. This is what happens at a dinner party type thing. It's a work in progress, but I'm happy to report that last year when I got married, I probably knew like 15 Norwegian words. No, I'm just kidding. Not maybe a few more than that, but I was like hopeless, like completely. And a year later, I'm quite a bit improved, and I would not say fully fluent, but better and better. The other thing with Norway that's interesting, of course, is it is a small country. There's only 5 million people that speak this language, and everyone speaks perfect English, and they want to practice their English. So that's the challenge I run into as well. Like if I'm like stumbling over my bad Norwegian at the doctor's office or whatever I'm doing, I'm getting tires changed on a car or something, they'll recognize that my Norwegian is not great, and they'll just switch to this perfect English. And it's really hard not to be like, no, in this one instance I want to try and get better at Norwegian, so let's just stumble along. You just go like, okay, this is why I'm here, thank you for switching to English, let's do these sorts of things. So although I am fully immersed in Norwegian life living here, a lot of people speak wonderful English, so that can be a bit of a challenge in a way.
In the house, what's the dominant language?
I'm embarrassed to say, but it's English. Yeah.
Oh, Devin.
I know, man. It's so bad. But we do switch back and forth quite a bit. So, yeah, for sure. Kristen's quite good with me about it, speaking Norwegian and being patient. But at the same time, like at the end of a long work day, you know, you've made dinner and you're sitting down, and after we've stumbled through some Norwegian for a bit, like, you know, the language does shift to English, and then we can have like a real debrief of how the day really went instead of like talking to a toddler.
You know, I know over the course of, say, you know, this last Olympic cycle and a little bit before that, you know, slowly but surely the big overall budget for cross country Canada has been reduced. You know, how has that personally affected you?
Oh, I mean, it's personally affected me greatly. I mean, I would say at this point now in my career, it's the worst funding and worst support that I've had in my entire career. And that goes for 2003, 2004, 2005, when we really had not much money. Like, it's changed dramatically. But there's also reasons for that. For example, like we had more support, more camps, more like way more like funding personally for ourselves as athletes, perhaps in 2004 than we do now. But at the same time, how many techs did we have to employ? 2. You know what I mean? And now we have like 8, not 8, but 6 full-time technicians. We didn't have a wax truck, you know, wax trucks cost money. We didn't have staffing, like there's just office staff. There was actually, like when I started with the senior national team, we had a staff of 2, like in the office, an administrator. And then Tom was like, Tom, our high performance director, he was still the high performance director back then, but he was a volunteer. So, and now I don't know how many staff we have at the Cross Country Canada offices, but it's for sure more than, I would say it's probably upwards, it's more than 15, that's for sure. So I mean, the overall load, the program is just at such a different level overall. But if you're asking me specifically a high performance program as it pertains to quote unquote World Cup team or like the top tier team in the country. The athletes personally are less supported than we were in 2004.
Does that mean that you spend more of your own personal time trying to raise funds to, you know, offset travel costs?
Oh, for sure. That's part of the game. And I mean, that's an area that I can readily admit that I struggle with. But the reality of cross-country ski racing in Canada nowadays is if you're top 10 in the overall World Cup or having multiple podiums a year, like, you will be fully supported. There is no difference. But if you're just on the World Cup team, there's specific parts of the year that are a pay-to-play system, and we do have team fees now. Last year was the first year in my career that I've ever had to pay a team fee for like being on the top tier team. Like, the B team has had team fees for quite some time, but for the A team. So like, there is some challenges, and yeah, you need to, you can look under the couch cushions and try and find the money, but once you've picked through all your furniture, I mean, yeah, you have to hit the ground and knock on some doors, and hat in hand. It's not super glamorous, and it's not, I absolutely like feel uncomfortable doing it, but yeah, no, for sure. You have to spend some time securing some personal sponsors and nurturing those relationships as well. So, you know, that's just the reality of where we are in Canada right now.
You're obviously based out of Oslo for this training season for the most part, or based out of Norway. And there's been a few articles here and there that you're on a kind of this Norwegian team. Can you describe what that Norwegian team is and what the arrangement is?
Sure. Like, this is kind of been misreported a little bit, but that's, I mean, I understand. That's totally understandable. So how, the big reason, I'm married. That's the big reason why I'm based here. That goes without saying. But another thing is, for me to be able to see my wife legally, I have to get some sort of residency to be able to come and go as I please within a country. So it would be the same as if I was American, or maybe not American necessarily, but let's say European and married a Canadian and wanted to stay in Canada. There's certain requirements that, with my Canadian passport, I can come and go out of Norway, but only stay 3 months every 6 months. So it's 6 months a year, but not 6 months straight and then 6 months gone. It's like, in a 6 month period, I can only be in Norway for 3 months, so 90 days in a 180 day period, which of course is not going to happen like when you're married. So like, hey, see ya, honey, I got to leave for 3 months. Like, no, that's unreasonable. So to get family residency permission, I'll never necessarily be a I will not be a Norwegian citizen because they don't allow dual citizenship. But to be allowed to come and go, this is a requirement. This first year, I need to spend 6 months of this first year in the country. And that doesn't sound like a whole lot, right? But it actually is, because as a ski racer, you're in and out for camps and races and that sort of thing. So I really have to make sure with my days that I spend them wisely, because it is quite expensive to apply for like family residency, as everything is in Norway is expensive. So it's no surprise that residency is as well. And then, of course, Kristen and I, like, all the paperwork that we had to fill out, just so many things that you need to do, right? Like, all the bureaucratic mess to even apply. If I don't fulfill the obligations, then it's all null and void, and then we have to do it all again. That's a big reason why I'm doing this year here, so that next year, for example, we could choose to for the rest of our life, I can come and go, and Kristen can come and go as we please, which is probably better. And then from the Norwegian team, this Team Telemark, I was approached and asked if I wanted to be a part of this program, and I didn't know much about it. It was a new project, and it was touch and go whether or not it was going to even get off the ground. And I'm like, oh yeah, sure, sounds fun, kind of thing. Like, thinking that like it would be nice to have some people to train with if I'm going to be based in Norway more. Turns out there's no one that lives in Oslo on that team, no men. So that part of it never really materialized. And then with training camps, the Canadian national team is my full and utter priority. So, but we only have 3 training camps this year. We had one in Mont-Tremblant, Montreal, the last week of June, first week in July. Then we have a training camp coming up here in Livigno, Italy, for 3 weeks, and that's at the end of August. And then we have our annual Park City camp in October. So those kind of conflict with actually a lot of the training camps with this Team Telemark. So I went skiing with them for a week in this place called Vikafjell in June. That was a lot of fun. And yeah, like maybe I'll do another week of training with them in September. I hope to, but that's really it. So, but they have been, they're a wonderful group of people, and it's been really great getting to know them. And it's too bad that it's not working out maybe exactly how I'd envisioned it. But at the same time, it's fun to just like, yeah, expand your friendship here in Norway and just feel a little more connected to the ski community at large as well. So that's been fun. And then the confusion with Kristen, with the whole thing, because I've had so many emails and like calls like, oh, Kristen's a coach now? Wow, crazy. Team Telemark itself was actually like a business consulting group, nothing to do with sport. It was called Team Telemark, and their business was business consulting. And Kristen did some work for that group. And then a few people within the Team Telemark business started Team Telemark, the cross-country ski team. And so that's where like the connection came about. And they asked Kristen to join the board of directors for this cross-country ski group. And Kristen said, yeah, sure. So she's involved with the group from a board level. So that's 35,000 feet, like four times a year. You know what I mean? So with like a conference call. So that was a bit of like misrepresentation. It was so funny. Kristen's boss, even like Kristen came into work and she didn't know that this was like in the newspapers and stuff. And her boss is like, oh, so you're a full-time coach now. And she's like, what? And her boss is laughing and she's like, no, I'm not. And then shows Kristen the article, and Kristen's like, oh my God. And I got on the phone right away and went like, what the hell are you reporting? Like, this is not true. Who told you this? So she had to backtrack. But she is involved with the cross-country ski Team Telemark as a board member.
Next question, having to do with the coaching situation or coaching scene in Canada or the Canadian national team. Were you surprised by Ivan retiring and becoming your coach?
Both yes and no. I was actually like super surprised because Ivan is such a competitor and loves ski racing so much and is the most positive person and has been his whole career. Like, his love of competing is just unbelievable. I mean, like, Ivan's whole story is just something. I mean, there could be a movie made about it. The choices he's made to be a ski racer is vastly different than the choices I've made to be a ski racer as a Canadian kid growing up. So in a way, yeah, like, I was quite surprised because in May and the better part of June, like, he was an athlete. Like, we were like texting back and forth, like teammate buddies, you know what I mean? Like, how's training going and stuff like that. So of course, like at the end of June, when I hear like, oh, he's suddenly retiring and now going to take a role with the Canadian national team. Like, yeah, of course, the first reaction is, of course, I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, wow. If I'm being truthful, yeah, he talked to myself and some of the other guys on the team, maybe some of the more like older guys on the team, that not necessarily that he was going to coach the Canadian national ski team, but that like maybe he's going to look for a coaching position. He wasn't sure. But then when April came and went and he started the season as an athlete again, I'm like, oh, he obviously thought this through or looked around and said like, oh no, I'm just going to be an athlete. So if he would have signed like, let's say May 1st, I wouldn't have been surprised. But the fact that he started the season as an athlete and then moved on to a coaching role, I was a little surprised, but I'm thrilled for him. And I'm really excited for him because ever since I've known him and been on a team with him, I mean, like, he has told me point blank that like his plan was to ski race as long as he loves it. And then in my head, I'm like, man, you're going to ski race till you're like 90 because you love it so much. And but then afterwards, he always had a goal to coach. I mean, it is like, let's be honest, it's going 0 to 100, you know. But at the same time, how many people in Canada know high level skiing at the World Cup level as it is today in 2016 better than Ivan Babakov? There's not many. Like, there's a lot of people with international experience and coaching experience as well. But these sorts of things get dated so quickly right now in sport. Just because you're an expert in the 90s doesn't make you an expert in 2016. So to have Ivan's expertise and just passion for the sport from a staffing role, like, man, I do think it is an asset. And for sure, like there's a lot of things that I don't think he needs to be quote unquote brought up to speed with, because he knows, and I'm really thrilled to work with him in that. And then for sure, of course, like, we have a good team around him. I trust that we do for maybe like some of more of the administrative roles, because obviously as an athlete, like, you train, you nap, you train, you eat, you sleep, you do repeat. So you're missing out on a lot of the administration roles, even though you want to pretend that you know what's going on. You don't really till you're in that role. So it'll take Ivan some time, I'm sure, to like get 100% confident in with that side. But I fully trust that we have a good team to help him do that. So no, I'm pumped.
And I know you're a veteran, and you probably don't need someone to handhold you and write out all the little details of your plan. But is he the kind of go-to person for you to kind of oversee the plan and check in?
Yeah, I mean, so in the last few years, like you said, like, I am a veteran. I've been around now. Like, this is the real bummer about Ivan being a coach now. It's like, now I'm the oldest on the team. Like, Babs, come on. Like, you are my ticket. Like, now there is, like, there's no reality like the reality of there's more yesterdays than tomorrows than when you wake up one day and realize, like, you're the oldest on the team. And, like, everyone's like, oh yeah, you've been doing this forever. It's like, not as long as I've been as the coach now. Damn it. So
how old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay.
So but for the last few years, you know, we've really worked on I've taken a lot more responsibility with my own training, and how it actually works is maybe more like a European model now, is where, quote unquote, like, I would write my own training plan and then vet it with a team or with somebody. So last year, how that was working was, like, I was predominantly like writing my own training, but Justin was that person that we'd write it together and talk about it and then make changes that way. And this year, how it started was the same. I'm writing my own training. And then we have a physiologist this year called Jess Christie, and she's amazing. And she's been the person from May that we'd talk with. So I'd write out training plans, and then we'd talk with each other about changes and how things are going. And she's reading my training logs and offering her advice and with training, that sort of thing. And then now that Ivan's into the fold, he's reading my training logs, and for sure, like, he offers advice as well. So it's just kind of like a collective approach, but really, like, I'm writing the training. And then at training camps, the coaches write the training. So in Tremblant, Louis set up the training plan predominantly. In Livigno, it would also be Louis that's kind of set the training plan mostly. And then in Park City, I'm sure Ivan will take a really active role with the training plan there. And then, of course, but yeah, like, Ivan, when we talk together, he's reading the plan, he's reading my training, he's offering advice, and we're adjusting as we go. But Jess, the physiologist, our team physiologist, has played an immensely active role, and I'm really thankful for that. She's fantastic at what she does, so it's worked out really well. But yeah, it's fun to have Ivan in the fold too. That's always kind of weird too. It's like, oh my god, Ivan's like reading my training logs. Like, yeah, he's the coach. So it's been fun. So he is my coach though. Yes, Ivan is the coach. Responsible for Devin Kershaw for me. Yes, absolutely.
One of the things you mentioned was, you know, there were only a few people who had the international experience and the know-how to kind of be a 2016 type World Cup head coach or league coach. And you said that things get dated or have become dated pretty fast. From your perspective, what has become dated?
From a training perspective, technique has evolved a lot in a short period of time, specifically something like double polling. And you see people double polling courses like Devos and being on the podium double polling courses like that. I mean, this is a huge leap, well, in my career, and actually only in the last few years. I like to say that, like, in 2011-12, I would probably say I was one of the top double pollers on the World Cup circuit. and in 4 short years, and I'm training and I'm working hard and I'm trying to do everything I can to be the best, I'm like mid pack at best in such a short period of time. So that happened rather quickly. And so that's a technical advancement. And then strength, and the leaders in that is, I mean, people don't like to hear it, but like the Norwegian team really changed the game when it came to like strength and conditioning for a cross country skier. And then linking that to technique, I mean, who's the leader in that in the last 4 years? It's Norway. And the whole world has gotten smacked in the face with that. And the results don't lie. So these are the kind of things that I think, like, unless you're living it and seeing the progression, and like, it's not enough to be like, oh yeah, I watch some YouTube videos and I see what that's about. Like I could get up to speed like that. Like, yeah, you could, everyone can, you will get up to speed. But it's going to take some time. Whereas like Ivan, he knows this is going on. He's seeing this going on. And as of May 2016, he was working on correcting that in himself. And then, so like, you can't get a fresher set of eyes from a coaching perspective with these sorts of advancements. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Yeah. So I think, and I think that's important, like honestly, and North America, and it's an island. You're an island in North America. And, you know, yeah, you can read articles and Google Translate stuff and like, but I mean, you know, you train all from May to October, and how many times have you heard coaches go like, oh yeah, these guys now are like, these guys are bosses, like they're gonna do it. Then they come to the World Cup and don't score points, or they, like, what happened? It's like, it's the game changes fast is what happened, and it's hard to stay current, period, for everybody. Because there is so many things changing, not daily, because that's just being like a bit ridiculous, but it does change quickly, and you need to have a finger on the pulse of the sport as it changes. So yeah, I think that's where Ivan's going to be like a huge asset for our team.
How much longer do you plan on continue racing?
Yeah, well, like, now, see, we can ask these questions now because I'm 33 and I am the oldest on the team. Damn it, I have to answer them too. I can't even dodge it. I can't be like, ask Ivan how long he's going. I'm extremely motivated for this year here, Lottie. And of course, fourth time's the charm. Nobody says that, but I'm going to try and make it that for the Olympics next year in Pyeongchang. You know, like having come so close in a few events in Vancouver, and then just failure on a spectacular level like our team experienced in Sochi, it's a huge motivation of mine and a huge drive of mine to see our team succeed at the Olympic Games, the men's team succeed. I've been involved and seen our women's team succeed at the Olympic Games. I've seen how hard they work. I've seen how talented they were and how driven they were, and I experienced sharing in that success with them. And I'm really, this is where maybe like I won't be kind of super Canadian for a second. Like, I'm really proud of the work that we've done in Canada from where our team was in 2003 as a nation for male skiing to where it is today. And I'm really, really proud to have been a part of that. And it's a dream of mine to see a man on the Olympic podium in Pyeongchang and not on TV, not see it on TV, or not see it from a wax bench or even like with a coach's radio on. Like, I want to be in the thick of it and involved in it from an athlete's perspective. So that's my biggest driving motivation. And the reality is, after 2018, like, I'd be surprised if I laced him up for one more year. There is a world championships in Seefeld, so you never know. But I would probably say like the next 2 years, most certainly. And then after that, if there is another year, it'll be 2019, but I would give that like a 10% chance of happening.
Do you think about having a post-skiing career based in Norway?
My post-skiing career is plain and simply like get an education, or else my mom, my PhD mother, will kill me. The writing, I know, I'll be going to school when I'm done skiing, and whether that's in, I would. Right now, the Norwegian education system is quite fantastic, especially post-secondary. It is free, so that's a huge draw. Yeah, no, for sure. So, of course, like my first choice would be to do can my post-secondary, finish my education here in Norway. And then if that's just like completely impossible, like no way, then for sure, like Kristen and I would probably move back to Canada or the US or whatever, like a more school system that I know. But no, for sure, the plan is to go to university when I'm done skiing.
There was a lot of buzz pre-Rio when the report was being released about the alleged Sochi doping. What was the buzz like in Norway and just the chatter when that report was released?
Well, I think the chatter was like no one's surprised. I mean, like it doesn't take a lot of journalistic digging to see in endurance sport, whether that's cycling, running, cross-country skiing, biathlon, which countries have had the most positive dope tests in, let's say, the last 15 years, and then just extrapolate it to percentages. So no, it's not surprising at all. You know, like here's the hard thing with the whole, like all these reports and all these things. As an athlete, I'm just getting a bit sick of like just lip service. How much lip service do we need to take? It's either a priority for us as a like WADA or IOC or FIS, like the people that are in charge of our prospective sports, or it is not. And enough reports, enough lip service, either take some action or I guess just say like, you know what, we're just going to rock the status quo. But regardless, I can't change any of that. I'm just doing the best I can to be the best I can be. I'm so thankful to have someone like Becky out there, like really putting herself out there in the name of clean sport. And she should be applauded for that because it's a bit scary, I think, right now. For the people that are on the front lines of that, like we should definitely give thanks and support them because I believe in a clean sport. I wouldn't be sitting on this couch talking to you right now, busting my ass every day if I didn't believe I could win clean, you know? So the people that are out there protecting that to protect that ideal so that an athlete like me can continue to believe that, like they should really be applauded. From the other side of the, like my personal perspective with anything with doping is like, A, if these things took place, then let's get some sanctions, period. End of discussion. Like this is like, if this happened, then sanction it. If it did not happen, then either find out, like keep working at it to prove it or admit that like, well, there's some gray areas and then that creates a whole nother bag of problems. But what I'd really like to say as an athlete is I still don't understand and will not understand ever why we don't have life bans for certain doping offenses in sport. It makes no sense to me. Absolutely zero sense. If you get caught taking EPO, blood doping, SARA, steroid, like anabolic steroid use, these sorts of things, give me a break. Sport is a privilege. It's not a right. And until the whole world sporting community understands this, you have a human right to like clean water. I believe that. I think you have a human right to some medical some medical attention if you so need it. Like, there's a lot of different things that we have as humans have a human right. Competing in sport, having some guy time you as you run around a track or ski around in the woods, and like, this is not your right. This is a privilege. And until we can recognize that as a group of athletes and sport in general worldwide, we're going to continue to have this ridiculousness. If you get caught taking EPO, you should be banned for life. End of discussion. Why? Because you can go out. You can be a gas station attendant. You can study law. You can study medicine. You can be a school teacher. There's so many other things you can do in your life, and you'll be fine. You just can't compete in this sport anymore. That's fine. It's not your right to compete in sport anyway. It was a privilege, and you abused the privilege, and now you lost that privilege. You know, like we teach our kids this when they're five. Why can't we teach adults this now? The reason why we can is it's so much money and corruption. But it, yeah. Can you tell I feel strongly about this? No, it's just like. But that's just my personal opinion. And as far as with reading these reports, like it's disappointing. It's saddening. But I still believe in clean sport. I still believe it's possible to win, at least in our sport. Thank God cross-country skiing doesn't have that much money in it. and yeah, we press on. I mean, what else can you do, really? let's be honest. You only have a certain amount of energy to deal with, and training takes a hell of a lot of that energy. Recovering, you know, being as prepared as you can be. And as long as you believe you can do it the right way, then I think that's where your focus should lie.
All right. Thanks for your time, Devin. I really appreciate it. And best of luck. All right. Take care.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Kershaw interview. If you have an idea for an interesting interview, send me an email at jason@fasterskeeter.com. Thanks.